Ettrick. Mr. Bellavance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving along on our agenda here, we're going to have a presentation from Robin Friede on Amendment 23 review metrics. So whenever you're ready, Robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So providing today for you an update on one of your multi-year priorities related to developing the metrics for the Amendment 23 review process. You began looking at this in the earlier half of last year and picking it back up for this year. And so for today, you'll be receiving an update on this and discussing potentially refining the list of metrics that the PDT will be considering and trying to further develop at this time. And so just a reminder of the council's intent for the review process and the metrics of be a part of this is this was established as part of Amendment 23 to evaluate the efficacy of the sector monitoring coverage targets, including establishing these metrics and indicators that look at how well the monitoring program improved accuracy while maximizing the value and minimizing costs. And looking at a rough timeline, again, beginning development of this work last year with the PDT, kind of brainstorming a wide list of possible review metrics and indicators. We've had some feedback from the advisors, the committee, and the council, which is what we'll be updating you on today. And then going forward, as the PDT further refines and develops the possible metrics and indicators, we're looking to have input from the SSC, beginning some preliminary analysis, and then later in the year, looking at the committee and the council determining the review metrics. With the plan, at least currently, for the review to occur in 2024, since the review process is specified to occur after 2 full years of data. And you might recall from last year, we're recognizing Amendment 23 was not implemented until partway through 2022. The target coverage level was set at 99%, so I think the recommendation from the PDT is this could be still allow the 2022 fishing year to be sort of the first year of the review being a high coverage target. However, as you are probably aware, there have been some changes to the target coverage level mid-year, as well as other considerations that were known as far as what would need to occur to sort of ramp up the observer coverage, building towards a higher coverage target. This might be something that would be potentially revisited. And so if you look, one of your documents is a draft discussion paper that the PDT put together. This is intended to be sort of a living document where we'll be updating our progress in developing the metrics. And there's a section that has where we've kind of captured ideas of possible review metrics and indicators. And just summarizing here some of the broad categories of metrics and indicators that have been brought forward so far. So things like looking at the realized coverage compared to the target coverage, looking at what are some of the factors or reasons, comparisons between different monitoring tools. This is where some of the discussion that occurred at the Groundfish Committee meeting about things like waivers, the different reasons for those, any sort of information on selections and acceptance rates, things that would factor into realized coverage levels. A category of metrics and indicators that look at monitoring bias and catch accuracy, so the intent being that the council has with Amendment 23 that higher levels of monitoring should minimize the potential for bias. And so we'll be looking at things like rerunning the PDT's monitoring analyses under the higher coverage levels, as well as evaluating things like species composition correlations and other potential metrics that get around trying to evaluate changes in catch accuracy. A category of metrics that would look at sort of fishery performance indicators, so whether there are changes in catch effort, quota leasing prices and fishing costs with the higher levels of coverage. And then finally, a series of ideas for indicators around sort of observer program administration or what could be considered social indicators. So this would be things like compliance with the pre-trip notification system or PTNS, refusals, observer safety issues, Another observer program administration issues, some of which were discussed yesterday, things like observer retention or recruitment success. And there are a couple other categories, metrics a little outside of that, some specific to looking at impacts or sort of changes with the maximized retention program, as well as factoring and evaluation of the management uncertainty buffers, removal with 100% coverage. And so you might recall back in June, the PDT had presented its sort of broad list of possible metrics and indicators and asked the advisors and then the committee and the council if they felt like there were any additions to add. And so after that, the PDT sort of provided some feedback on whether those felt that those would be useful to include as part of the sort of suite of possible metrics. And so just providing that feedback back today. So going through some of the advisor ideas, the first is looking at rerunning the assessments with severe retrospective patterns once there is more data available under the higher coverage targets. And the PDT did not recommend adding this as a metric, and that's mainly this is a much longer timeline than would be could be addressed under a two-year timeline for the review. And there are other factors such as the fact that there are other issues besides lower observer coverage that could be resulting in retrospective bias patterns, and the fact that assessments that rely on past data sort of continue that may have had bias would be continuing to be influenced by that bias. The second metric is related to asking to look at a comparison of the observer companies and the different providers. And documenting why trips are selected or not observed, what are the reasons for that. And the PDT also didn't recommend this as a metric, not that it doesn't feel that this is an important component to the operation of the monitoring program, but rather that it's better addressed in other forums, such as what occurs or discussions that happen between the providers, the sector managers, and GARFO to understand why there are issues with providers having observers available, but would recommend, the PDT would recommend, as far as how this relates to the overall success of the monitoring program achieving the coverage targets, would look at overall trip selections and acceptance rates. The third metric idea from the advisors is something related to basically asking whether there are delays in getting this additional data from higher levels of coverage to the sector managers for them to use to manage their sector members' catches for catch accounting purposes. The PDT did feel that this would be an interesting metric to explore to really try to measure the monitoring program effectiveness, since the main goal with the monitoring program is trying to achieve full catch accounting. And so if there's potential delays, sector managers are using older data for catch accounting, maybe there's some of that could be undermining the program. So felt it's worth trying to explore developing some sort of metric getting at this this aspect. The fourth idea here is about analyzing costs of monitoring before and after Amendment 23, trying to break it down by these different categories of costs. And the PDC would recommend looking at this as a metric and sort of noting some considerations in terms of or where there could be some challenges trying to break out those costs, just depending on how CDA rates are determined, but it's something they can look into. The fifth idea, asking for a metric on cost-benefit analysis, could look at the cost of monitoring a discarded pound of fish both, pre- and post-Amendment 23. And the PDT did not recommend this as a metric, primarily because as the council may remember, the purpose with Amendment 23 is to improve catch accounting overall. So would feel that this could be looked at if it's looking at overall catch rather than focusing on discards. And sort of the benefit of higher coverage is to improve accuracy of catch overall and full catch accounting. There would be some considerations as to how to develop a cost benefit analysis. What was done in the development of Amendment 23 was a cost efficiency analysis. The sixth one is very similar, sort of also related to tracking costs of the program against discards. And again, the PDT is not recommending these, pointing out that the main purpose of Amendment 23 is for accuracy of full catch or total catch and of catch accounting. The seventh metric is sort of a recommendation to look at sort of the specific aspect of, I think, what is now being called the vessel of concern list, or maybe previously was called the do not deploy list. One of the criteria that sort of a newer criteria for being issued a waiver from monitoring was related to COVID-19 and CDC health guidelines. And so the advisors were recommending looking at how this may have impacted achieved coverage. And the PDT does recommend looking at this as one of the metrics to look at some of the reasons for differences between realized coverage versus target coverage. And I think overall as a whole, looking at some of those different waiver categories or different aspects of vessels that may have been issued, waivers would be on the vessel of concern list. And then the last one here is not a metric, but more something for the PDT to consider as it's developing the metrics and certainly when it conducts the review. And that is recommending that they consider how potential changes in the fishery would be operating this fishing year, which is referring to fishing year 2022 with was it proposed, but what we know is a significant cut in the Georgia's Bank Cod ABC and how that might change where people are fishing. Also impacts of high fuel costs. And I think the PDT certainly recognizes this is something we'll have to factor in as it's trying to compare how some of these fishery performance indicators may be changing with higher coverage when you have other factors like higher fuel prices, certainly COVID impacts. And then now we have, of course, the Gulf of Maine cod haddock decline would probably be another, the ABC for that decline coming in next year would be another consideration going forward. And so the committee also provided some additional ideas. These were the same that came through the council. So a number of these, at least these first couple, are fairly straightforward. The first is just recommending, comparing the target coverage levels to the realized coverage and also comparing this across different monitoring tools and would certainly recommend this as a metric. The second one is looking at numbers of trips where waivers are issued for monitoring and the different reasons for this. Again, we'd recommend this. And since we had the Grand Fish Committee meeting, we've received the letter from the Science Center, which I touched on a little bit yesterday. There's some additional information about some of those different, some of those different waiver categories, and those are some of the things that the PDT would be looking into. The third is, again, recommending, as the PDT has as well, just emphasizing rerunning the PDT's monitoring bias analyses, which we would recommend and plan to do. The fourth, recommending looking at overall industry and agency costs, and again, comparing between different monitoring tools, electronic monitoring and human at-sea monitoring. There was some discussion recommending this, I think making sure that this is or an interest in looking at what are the industry's costs versus the agency's costs and comparing that to the funding levels that we have available. The fifth recommendation is specifically looking at efficacy of the dockside monitoring component of maximized retention electronic monitoring, which is something the PDT recommends considering. So sort of evaluates this relatively newer monitoring tool as a its effectiveness in achieving the program goals. The sixth one recommended to look at additional analysis that tries to quantify the magnitude of bias, sort of following up on recommendations that came out of the peer review, SSC subpanel peer review of the PDT's monitoring analysis and focusing on some ideas to pursue for two of those in particular. And the PDT does at least is discussed or recommended considering this and trying to sort of recognizing that there have been some earlier analyses that were conducted as part of developing Amendment 23 to try to get into this question of magnitude of the bias, and it's worth considering further. The seventh is similar to some of the other metrics in terms of looking at true cost of monitoring, and a specific interest in looking at it by sea day versus days absence. That's oftentimes more how industry is thinking of costs, and the PDT thinks that's or recommends looking at this, sort of recognizing that we'll have to try to break costs out to the individual costs to the best ability, sort of based on how the CDA rates are structured. Those can be different by different providers. The eighth one is related to looking at statistical area and broad stock area reporting. This was something that was discussed during Amendment 23, but there's no specific alternatives that related specifically to trying to improve broad stock area reporting, but the PDT would recommend considering this as a metric. Not sure that it would be specifically rerunning the analysis that's referred to here, but certainly worth trying to look at this issue. The ninth one, comparing and contrasting discard estimates by monitoring program. And I think just a nuance to explain that the maximized retention monitoring program is the dockside monitoring component of it. They're collecting data on fish that are now retained as sublegal fish. Previously would have been discarded, but PDT does recommend as a metric to sort of be comparing across those monitoring tools to try to look at effectiveness of each of those. The 10th one is a duplicate, again, rerunning the monitoring analyses. The 11th one is sort of a spin-off of the monitoring analyses in recommending examining whether the vessels that showed observer bias remained in the fishery, and then the PDT thinks that's worth considering and at least trying to dig into. The 12th one here is related specifically to the exemption or exclusion from at-sea monitoring for vessels that fish exclusively west of 7130, sort of the southern New England area, looking at differences in their discard estimates before and after Amendment 23, and would recommend looking at this, recognizing that there is an additional review process that the Council established in Amendment 23 specific to evaluating these this exemption, as well as the previous exemption from at-sea monitoring that's been in place for the extra large mesh gillnets. And then finally, the last one here is, again, not specifically a metric, but more of a something to consider for the PDT, which is to recommend looking at QAQC, or just trying to refine lease price data when examining that. And that's something we would plan to look into further. And so I think what our plan going forward would be, so we've got this draft discussion paper. Again, this is sort of our living document, documenting our development of the metrics. Currently, we have, just kind of go through the outline here, overview, providing an explanation of what the council's intent is with the review process, background information that includes reference to the documents such as the FEIS, the appendix that specifically has the PDT's monitoring analysis, and now the proposed and final rules, a glossary of terms that includes some new terms that have been defined in the regulations with Amendment 23, objectives and goals of the Amendment 23, the monitoring program, and the review. We have a section that we plan to document sort of a summary of fishery conditions, as it's going to be helpful context as the PDT gets into actually doing the review, trying to understand how some of these might be influencing changes in some of these metrics that could be outside of monitoring. And so currently that has the previous frameworks affected environment, which we plan to update with the affected environment that's being updated and reviewed currently for framework 65. We also have a note that at some point I think we'll plan to come to the groundfish advisors and perhaps sector managers to get some of their observations. And then you'll see in the fourth bullet here is where we sort of have in like a bulleted notes format where we have our PDT's ideas for the possible review metrics and indicators. We would be adding the additional options that we just went through in the previous slides and sort of going forward to refine those. As you maybe saw, there's some overlap with some of them, so we'll be sort of further refining those and developing them. We also have some discussion about as we start to do the review and we need to establish sort of a pre-Amendment 23 base a period of years for comparison, as well as some ideas for the review process of the monitoring exclusions and how that might factor in. So currently, since that exclusion was just implemented for 7130 about a month ago or a little more, the PDT would feel that that one also specifies 2 years of data, so that would need to occur at least beginning in 2023. So it might be a little potentially offset from the full monitoring review. And then also the timeline that's shared at the beginning. And so the committee didn't have motions, so just tried to capture some of the feedback that we heard last week. There were a lot of great questions and some ideas for potentially additional metrics beyond what was discussed in some of the PTT's feedback. Definitely heard support overall for the council and committee recommendation number 4 in your slides about overall industry and agency costs, evaluating that again specifically, requesting looking at both or separating the industry and then the agency shoreside costs and looking at that against funding. There's a lot of discussion on impacts of the vessel of concern lists on trip selection and realized coverage and thinking that should be evaluated. I think there's some recognition that this is like a relatively small number of vessels, and it is something that the managers that the Observer Program and GARFO and sector managers work to reduce the number of vessels on the list, but there remain concerns about how that can impact the pool of trips for selection and realized coverage levels and potential inequities in coverage. And this is related, at least as sort of a spinoff of the advisory panel recommendation, sort of looking beyond just the COVID waivers and sort of a vessel of concern list overall. The third bullet here is there's some discussion about the recommendation from the advisors to look at considering the cost-benefit analysis to look at. So the PDT didn't recommend this, since that was specific to or recommending looking at that with regard to discards. If you were to adjust it to be based on relative to total catch, that would meet the intent of Amendment 23. The idea of sort of looking at this as a evaluating the cost of the program versus the benefit of gaining additional information, how that might be helpful for the council in the future to evaluate coverage levels in the future. And then finally, there was a discussion about a topic that's come up before in Amendment 23 development, that's looking at trip selection bias, concerns about monitoring coverage levels not being equal among vessels, as well as the interactions between the ATSI monitoring and the NEFOP trip selection process. You might recall this is something that the council discussed sort of in the later development of the Amendment 23 alternatives. Very complicated topic. There have been a number of some letters between the council and the science center on this, as well as PDT memos. Or at the time, I think the council decided it would be more practical to sort of see what Amendment 23 implemented as far as coverage levels, what the monitoring structure was, and then if this is an issue that remains a concern, it'll be something to consider in the future. And so again, next steps, the PDT is planning to fold in those additional recommendations to our sort of working base lists of possible metrics and indicators. You saw that there's some overlap, so we'll probably find some of those. We'll begin exploring and developing these. Some of these might be things where we need to do some initial analysis to sort of see if they're viable options. We're working towards having the, an SSC subpanel provide some input sometime in the first half of this year. And then we do plan for this to be an iterative process. So going back to the advisors, the committee, and the council to get further input as the PDT is developing the list of metrics over this year. And so again, you have an opportunity to discuss some of the feedback the PDT has provided on your additional recommendations. If there's anything else that you feel like the PDT should think about in terms of adding to the suite of possible metrics and indicators they'll be looking at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Freedy. So there's no motions or anything like that today, but if there's any questions for Ms. Freedy or comments or possible additions of any other metrics or indicators for consideration in the future. So with that, I'm going to open it up to the council. I'll start with Ms. Etri and then Mr. Salerno.
Thank you. With the eye of the constant living document and developing metrics, I have an additional metric I'd like to include that's kind of building off of the trip selection equity discussion that we have during Amendment 23. It's come up with some recent correspondence, and we talked about it last week. And Robin and I have been talking about it offline, just trying to capture how to craft the metric in a way that will help the working group kind of and the sub-PDT group work through it. So just for inclusion, I don't know if I read it into the record. Is that what I do? Just to add it in. To add as a metric, a comparison of realized coverage achieved at the vessel and sector level is broken out between NEFOP and ASM coverage, evaluate potential trade-offs in coverage and cost equity or inequity, and implications to stock assessment data under the current coverage design that uses both programs to fulfill the target coverage rate versus decoupling the programs to inform consideration of ideas like vessel-specific target coverage rates in the future. And that just kind of is my attempt to build off of discussions we've been having ongoing about this one.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Etri. Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Robin, for this. As I said earlier, I wasn't able to make the Groundfish Committee meeting, so you know, provided me an opportunity to look through what you have here. I've already provided, I think, in the committee a number of recommendations, but I just want to touch upon a few of the things that I see in this presentation, just clarification. So on the gap recommendation number 3 on slide 55, where you're talking about understanding whether there are delays in getting additional data from higher coverage to sector managers, I would initially say that I wouldn't list this as a very high priority. We know there are delays. There has been delays for a while now that predated Amendment 23. I don't know, and we know that the agency is working on to fix this, and maybe it's an idea of maybe rejiggering to look at that, maybe looking at the reasons behind these delays, because a delay to me means that I may not have the actual observer data, but I do have the backfall of the discard rates to attribute. So it's not a major issue on my part, but it's just something to consider that maybe we can rejigger number 3 to come up with a better way to look at this delay in data. On slide 59, I think this is one of the ones that I gave to you. It's just under number 7, that A and B, I believe, is supposed to be under number 8 because it didn't read right, and I think that's the two lower bullet points should be listed under number 8, not under number 7.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely right. I can see that now.
Okay. And
something got lost in translation.
Yeah, no, not a problem. And I think I saw that in one of the documents it was right, but I just wanted to clarify in this presentation that it didn't look right to me. On the next slide, number 60, recommendation number 3 about the QAQC on lease price, that was another one that I gave to you. And I just wanted to give you a little context on why I put this on there. Is, you know, over the past, what, about 3 years I've been on the council, I see various documents come through that show lease prices, and there are numbers that are reflected in some of those presentations and figures that, to me as a sector manager, does not make any way, shape, or form or sense. I could probably, you know, sit down with you offline and kind of go through some of the things that I think that it may be real, but it, just my experience of 12 years in the lease market, these numbers do not seem real. So, and the other reason why I brought this up is that at least one of the PDT analyses did look at lease price. So it was just something to flag that, you know, and like I said, I could kind of maybe sit down with you later or, you know, someone else and kind of go through what I'm seeing in some of these lease price presentations. And my general question is, so in the Amendment 23, obviously we said, well, when's this process, the review, going to start? Obviously it was when Amendment 23 was implemented. Well, we know it didn't start May 1st, it's starting roughly recently, I give you that, but we did start the year at a very pretty high coverage level of 90.